The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. Let's move into a Tuesday. Gary, how the heck are you?
Well, I'm doing good. And as I told you right before we went on the air, I said, I'm not ready to do a show. No. I'm just not ready to do a show again. And then I looked at you and I said, I'm never ready to do a show anymore.
Nah.
Just when I think I've got all the topics, you know, and all the different stories, right before I go on the air, I find five more. And so you're just constantly analyzing because there's so many different stories out there. So I don't mean nobody really cares about my problems. Nobody cares about my first world problems, do they?
Probably.
Oh, how tough it is for you. Oh, you had five
poor
extra stories right before you went
host.
On the air. Oh, please pity me. I'm sorry, but I got to this the article from Politico that said, Trump would be crazy to sit with Mueller. Mueller would be crazy to insist.
That's a valid point, right?
Yes.
That's, yeah.
And so I just, when I read that, I just, you know, burst out laughing. And so we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. The Obama portrait's just moments away. But we need to start out when parody is so close to reality. And another parody website is the Babylon Bee. And sometimes they're so good that a buddy of mine posted this on Facebook. My buddy Jeff posted it on Facebook. And the first person that responded thought it was a real story. And was like furious. And just said, what? But the Babylon Bee is like, you know, it's like the Onion.
Right.
And so my buddy Jeff posted this story. First guy had no idea it was a parody. He's like, what? The things are just great. He goes, no, it's a parody. Because I know it's getting so close to reality. But this is their Olympic update. Displaying a total disregard for gender equality, organizers of the Winter Olympics have segregated the world's largest athletic competition into two categories strictly on the basis of sex. Viewers were shocked to discover discriminatory events like men's speed skating and women's ice hockey on the program. The bigoted, intolerant separation of male and female athletes triggered a series of angry protests, and the hashtag Olympics Patriarchy began trending on Twitter. Quote, they are still trying to tell us that men and women are different, complained one protester. Don't they know that we have achieved the age of gender fluidity? It's 2018, for God's sakes. Activists hope to eliminate gender divisions for the 2020 Summer Olympics, at which time they plan to boycott the Olympics over the inevitable gender medal gap that will result.
I love it. And I told you, okay, wait for it. Because by the time we get around to the, you know, the 2020 Olympics, at the very least the next Winter Games, right? Likely. We'll be at that point. People will be protesting.
Yeah.
Why is it? Now, most of those people likely will, they won't be the athletes. You know who they'll be? The athletes that didn't make it.
Right.
You know, like the quarterbacks who don't make it to a team.
Well, again,
they continue to protest.
As we've talked about, we said, you know, just like the whole transgender leftist activism out there.
Uh-huh.
And how do we know? Why do we say leftist activism? Because we've had people call the show who have told us they're transgender, but they're conservative, and they don't buy into it. I remember the one gentleman who called us.
Mm-hmm.
I believe. I'm not sure now.
No, I know we didn't call him, if that's the question.
I remember one person. No, no, one people.
You can't say person.
Well, I guess people.
Individual.
I guess people.
Individual.
One individual, yes. One individual called and said, look, I am what I am, but I don't care what you think, and I don't expect you to. I could care less what you think. This is about me. It's not about you. And so I'm not trying to convince you of anything.
Yeah.
And it would be stupid for me to try to convince you of anything.
Just want to live my life.
Right, because this isn't about you. And we said, no problem.
Well, that's, I think as conservative libertarian, that's the only thing really that, that for me is I could care less. Go live your life. As long as you're not interfering with anybody else's life, and violating anyone else's rights, and you're obeying the law, then I don't have a problem. I don't have any business in your business. But the thing is that the agenda kept using that, right? You don't have any business in our business. And I think you made the point when we were talking about, you know, the whole birth control thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it was, stay out of our bedroom until there's consequences, and then you right. pay for... Well, I mean, you know, there, it was this entire thing is about you being more in our business. And we talked about how the hippies of the 60s, and we use that affectionately. Not that we're going to hug you or anything. That's not going to happen. But that's maybe the libertarian attitude that came out of the 60s in part, and that was the government, get out of our business. Some of the other stuff was very liberal, but it was stay out of our business. And now it's stay out of our business, but give us everything for our business.
Right. And it doesn't work that way. If you expect somebody to support your lifestyle through their hard-earned dollars, then they are going to expect some kind of control. You may not like it. It's just the way that it is. And it yeah. was, what was her name? Sandra, I can't think of her last name. It was the Georgetown student. Who
Fluke?
Yeah, Sandra Fluke. When mm-hmm. when she was, you know, wanting, you know, free contraception. Mm-hmm. And free contraception, you know, whatever paid for by the college, and that was out there, free contraception, mm-hmm. free birth control. And we said, look, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, don't tell me what to do with my body. But if I'm irresponsible, you need to pay for the consequences of it.
That's right.
And or I plan on being irresponsible, and therefore I'm going to need birth control and you're going to have to pay for it because it's too expensive for me. Well, no, if you wish to get your own birth control, that's fine and do whatever you wish to do. But so what you're saying is you have an inalienable right to have sex whenever you want and have me pay for the birth control? So if you're not responsible, that I have to be responsible for you? I don't think so. Very, very simple concepts. But, you know, you and I talked about, you know, with the whole liberal transgender movement in this country that it would inevitably lead to. And we, I don't know, maybe because we're up late at night and we have so long to talk. and so our minds, you know, drift to different places quicker than others. But we said this, I don't know, probably 3 years ago, I think, is when we first came up with it. And we said, look, the transgender movement's going to create a war with feminists. We saw it coming. And it has. And we said it's also going to create a war. And we're talking about, you know, liberal feminists. And then we said it's also going to eventually end up with the transracial movement after Rachel Dolezal. And then you're going to have the liberal transracial and transgender activists at war with the feminist and the liberal civil rights activists in this country. And that's exactly what's coming. What was it? The governor of Delaware that came up with the thing about students can be whatever the proposal that students can be whatever they wish to be, whatever gender and whatever race mm-hmm. They wish to be. And the parents, this is a proposal, and the parents wouldn't be able to, you know, be involved in it if the children didn't want the parents to be involved in it.
Right.
And that was really where we saw government the first time. And this is just a couple of weeks old, getting involved in the transracial movement here in this country. And so we read the Babylon Bee here where they talk about the fact of, the parody that here in 2018, they're screaming that, you know, we shouldn't separate the Olympics by gender. Of course, that's not happening at this moment. But the fact is to sit there and project out and say, but it's going to happen. And then when it does happen, they're going to be screaming because the men are going to be winning the vast majority of the medals. except in curling. Mm. And and at that point, they'll start. And that's where you've got the left going up against the left. Forget about having problems with the right. The left is having problems with the left. So there you go. So that's when parody becomes too close to reality. We got a great show ahead. We got a great discrimination lawsuit to tell you about. For the first time in decades, more people are leaving San Francisco than new people coming in. Remember when urban planners and futurists looked at San Francisco and said it will be in 20 years the whitest city,
mm-hmm.
because they have found a way, you know, how to create discrimination at the same time preaching love and caring and diversity for all.
Yeah.
And that's just price everybody but the elite rich white people out of your town.
Yep.
So we'll get to that here. The ethanol mandate causing problems. NBC sees a drop in the Sunday Olympic ratings. Latest on Russian collusion, Bill Murray asked about politics and comedy. Did an interview on CNBC.
Hmm.
Yes, the comedian Bill Murray. We'll get to part of that. New York Times CEO says print journalism has maybe another 10 years, and then it's done.
That means New York Times. 10 years is generous, probably.
Yeah. Trump supporters interviewed. We'll have that for you. Now, I don't want to spend much time on this. My mother told me that if you don't have anything nice to say,
then be a talk show host.
Then say it anyway.
then choose the right career field.
The Obama portraits.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's. For a moment there, I thought maybe he was a portrait of an outfielder at, you know, Fenway Park or, you know, whoever's got the ivy going up the wall, you know, the outfielders with their.
Right. Yeah.
If you saw that, it was pointed out. It looks like he has an extra finger and they pointed that out and, on his hands. Of course, when I first saw the picture this morning or yesterday morning, I thought it was a parody.
You thought somebody had photoshopped it or something?
Yes, I thought it was like, some kind of joke.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't think it was serious.
Yeah.
I really didn't. I didn't think it was serious.
Right.
I was like, you know, what's going on here? And so I burst out laughing. And when I found out it was really the portrait, I lost it. And if you think it's wrong for me, if you're on the left and you think it's wrong for me to find it hilarious, do what immediately happened on social media. Go and look at when people photoshopped Donald Trump's face onto that picture. And then you'll understand that as a presidential portrait, why that is absolutely hilarious. Did you see the Trump?
The photoshopped one?
The photoshopped one of Trump?
Yeah, right.
So if you think,
I think I saw that one first, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, because I had been... I left my phone on a charger in my vehicle, and I had been in a doctor's office for a couple of hours. And I came back out, and I was like, wait, what? First of all, I said, man, the president lost that weight very quickly. He shed probably 30 or 40 pounds. Oh, that's not him. It does look like Obama has an extra... finger. It would be
You look at
his left hand, which is crossed over onto his
right, and you look
right
at that
elbow.
And some people just said, he's got an extra.
I didn't notice that before. Now it's freaking me out. You shouldn't have said that.
I just love the people that were doing detailed analysis of it.
Right.
It's like, well, no, the thumb is here on the top. And so the bottom of it, you see another finger, which is like underneath the fourth finger on the bottom. It's like, wow.
Right.
Oh, man, just greatness. So we've got a great show ahead. Plus, your calls and comments. If you would like to get in, we would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. So I just started going through some, you know, mainstream media, liberal websites. I'm looking at CNN, and I'm just, you know, I'm like, where is the Democrat memo? Where is it? It should be the only thing that they're talking about.
Right.
Where are the Democrats talking about the memo and the fact that they're all getting together to, you know, release it? I'm looking here. Maybe it's somewhere on the front. I just started looking here as we were coming back. I can't find it in the top, I don't know, looking at the top 20 stories right now. Nothing. Looking at it right now. And I'm thinking to myself, and you and I asked this question yesterday, are they just going to drop it?
This is interesting. The top headline in my search, and of all places, RollingStone.com. Where is the House Democrats' Russia memo? 11 hours ago. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure they're asking the question, and I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure they're asking, okay, where are we on this? You know, where... Mm-hmm. Where's it going to go from here, or, you know, what happens next? As the president is basically, he sent it back to Schiff and said, rewrite it, you know, and then we'll release it. Nothing.
And as Republicans said, we would have, why weren't they in there Saturday doing it and then voting on it on Sunday and releasing it by, you know, by Sunday night?
Right.
It's not the accusations, it's the things that, you know, it's the top secret things that they're using to and I'm not sure, but maybe to back it up. Well, I mean, there were allegations that weren't necessarily backed up with specifics, even in the Republican memo, where a little, you know, some holes were left in and some questions. And that's what you do the first time. And then you wait for more, you know, you because then that creates more public interest and then more is slowly released. But it's the fact that the Democrats don't seem to be talking about it yesterday. The Democrat media doesn't seem to be talking about it yesterday. It seems to have disappeared, which has brought us to a couple of questions. And one of those questions is it because there's nothing really there that is a bombshell whatsoever? Or is it the possibility that when the Republican criminal referral came out from the Senate, it filled in some of the holes, some of the minutiae of the Republican memo that it might have left out and therefore left the Democrats no place to go. But I find it interesting that, you know, I look at CNN and, you know, the first part of it is basically, you know, talking about, you know, Trump looked the other way in the budget hole. GOP representative, budget is the worst piece of legislation I voted on. It's sort of like, okay, let's put Republicans against Republicans here. But on the Democratic memo, it seems to have disappeared. And they do have, you know, Obama administration discuss how much of the Russia probe to share with the Trump team. That was a story yesterday, but nothing on the Democrat memo. Nothing.
You know, the only thing they have, essentially, the latest is, and this was from The Hill over the weekend. This actually was on Sunday. And from TheHill.com, Schiff, the top Democrat on the House Intel Committee, says they're working with the FBI to redact some of the stuff. But let's see if that happens. Here's your forecast.
We're not done with rain in the south. The lower Tennessee Valley will see more light rain today and through the week. Flood warnings and advisories have been issued for numerous states, including western North and South Carolina and the western half of Georgia. The rain chances will extend from eastern Texas over to the coastal Carolinas and southward throughout the day and, as I mentioned, throughout the week. Buffalo, as we head to the northeast, should be partly sunny today, high 30. Boston, sunny, 33. Now, icing will be possible overnight in those areas where the rain ends, but the cold temperatures meet up, say around the West Virginia, Maryland, VA line in some of the areas of usual suspect, Cumberland area and Maryland, mainly due to the wet roads from rain and a big drop in overnight temperatures. Heavy snow and hazardous travel conditions are expected over portions of the central and southern Rockies. Your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They live the life. They walk the walk. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yes, so there I am. I'm just going through just the whole CNN website, because I did notice yesterday, by the time we got to the middle of the day, I'm like, what about the Democrat memo? Where is it? Where is anybody screaming and yelling, you know, a couple of articles over the weekend? Well, we plan on getting together with the FBI. Well, you know, in the... If we have to, we'll try to get a whole House vote to override the president. That's not going to happen. And so where is the let's take care of this right now and get this Democrat memo out right now? And why isn't? Here's the other point, and that's why I went through the whole CNN front page. And you're looking at how many stories? Probably 75 stories.
Oh, easy, yeah.
Different on that page. Not one single story about the Democrat memo. And I looked at this when I got up, so it still would have been Monday when I was looking at it. I'm like, wow. I mean, just completely and totally disappeared. So what's up with that? If this memo, and remember, they hyped that the Republican memo was going to affect national security. And then they said that the Democrat memo comes out, it will show you that this is all bogus. So the president says, uh-uh. And they're not even, I mean, you don't even, I didn't even see mass criticism yesterday of the president saying, nope, look, the attorney general and the FBI director told me not to release it, so I won't release it, clean it up, and we'll release it. I didn't even see massive hysteria. You know, maybe on Friday you did, late Friday and maybe into Saturday. But by Monday, which is the first day of the next week, when you, okay, let's get momentum back again, you would figure the Democrats would have been everywhere screaming about it and everybody writing about it. Nothing. Why not? In fact, I'm looking at CNN right now and got to, down to the bottom of the page, and Obama's portraits unveiled. Opinion, Barack Obama's new portrait of loneliness.
Of loneliness?
Of loneliness. That's
you mean
the
because George Clooney's not hanging out with him?
I have no idea. And then analysis of Michelle Obama's portrait. This is CNN. Analysis. Michelle Obama's portrait doesn't look just like her. It doesn't have to.
Well, wait a minute. No. If that were Melania Trump, that would be the picture. Doesn't look anything like her, and here's why. And then there would be some kind of bogus reason.
Yeah, so I just
today I started, and some of these things were like web ads, but it started popping up everywhere. The president's strange hairstyle finally explained. Really? You can't get collusion, so you're going for hairstyle. Yeah. It's just weird. Just bizarre. Do people sit in the middle of Ivy? I tend not to do that.
One of the analysis I saw said, well, what actually is that? And they actually showed poison sumac and said, look how close this looks to poison sumac.
Well, see, that's my problem is that, you know, I once had some ivy in the corner of my backyard and not much of it, but I was always afraid that poison ivy, and there are two different things, but, or something, you know, would weeds or whatever would grow in that. So I just finally, no, I'm going to clear it out. I never had a desire to go put a chair in the middle of it. Hey, take a picture of me in the ivy.
But then again,
where are you going to do what? If you're going to do a portrait of a president, what are you going to have as a background? I mean, normally it's a nothing background. It's like a blue background or something. There's nothing in the background.
Did you see that? And this was going on social media, the collage of all the different presidents.
Right.
And it's just the presidents and really nothing behind them.
There's nothing behind them because the focus is on the person.
And there's like 20 presidents all in this, and in the middle is Obama with all the ivy or whatever the play. They said, well, it has to do with Hawaii and everything else. With all that behind him, and it's hilarious. And as I said, if you think we're picking on Obama, Well, then I laughed just as hard, probably harder, at when somebody airbrushed, or whatever they call it today. What do they call it?
Not photoshopping.
Photoshopped. Mm-hmm. When they photoshopped Trump's face into the and Trump's suit, because it was a different suit too. Mm-hmm. It was Trump in, with the red tie on. Mm-hmm. When they put Trump in it, it was just as funny. Because it just doesn't, well, I'll tell you what it is, it doesn't look presidential.
Yeah, the one I saw was Trump's head on Obama's
right.
body, and it was just basically from the shoulders up.
Right, because the hands were still the Obama-painted hands.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so the background just looks weird, just looks odd. Why would you choose that? Why does there need to be anything in the background? Because I'm thinking then, okay, they had a discussion, right? They had a series of meetings. Okay, what's going to be in the background? What would it be? Maybe the nation's capital, right? Or mm-hmm. I don't know, that picture from the opening sequence of House of Cards on Netflix. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, Chicago, his adopted hometown. Right. I'm going through it. They had to have sat down in order to decide what is going to be. Okay, we're going with the Ivy? Yeah, definitely the Ivy. Hey, anyone ever sat in Ivy? Do you sit? Do you stand?
So the question is, eventually when the Trump portrait comes out,
he's gonna be at McDonald's at the drive thru. He's gonna be I mean,
because I can just see Trump with his portrait, he only did it to take away the focus of Obama's.
Right.
And even though it might be 4 or 8 years from now, when he does it, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So all I know is I burst out laughing when I saw, you know, his, you know, because I really thought it was a parody. I thought, I didn't understand it. When somebody, this is the Obama portrait, and I'm like, okay, well, this is obviously a parody. But yeah. I don't get it. What's the joke? And this was the first 5 minutes that I was awake. As soon as I woke up and I was, you know, half asleep, looking at my phone, going, "What? It doesn't make any sense." I'm doing further stories, and then people are sending me to check my email. People say, "Hey, did you see the official portrait?" I went, "Really? This is really the official portrait?"
Well,
and then somebody sent me the Trump one, and that was it. I was losing it at that point. I said, "Well, this is going to be the pop culture story of the day."
There were different versions of the Trump one, and they did it with all his Trump faces. You know, with the angry face or the shouting face or whatever. Okay. And so people have been photoshopping like crazy on it. When I saw it, it looked the actual portrait. It looked, you know what I thought of first? Mad Magazine.
Yes!
It kind of had that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I don't know why, but it was just maybe the way it was done, the technique used. It looked like something, like you said, kind of a parody kind of thing. It's weird.
Yeah, because for the first 5 minutes I was awake, I didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this? It doesn't make any sense. And I was... I didn't get what I thought was a joke. I didn't get what the joke was, and that was frustrating me. I don't get what the joke is. If he's got his portrait coming out today, why is this a joke? That, you know, what kind of joke are people trying to, you know, what are they trying to communicate in this portrait that's obviously a joke of the former president?
Yeah.
When I realize it's not a joke, it's really his portrait. Like, wow.
So you know what's going to happen with the Trump one? It's going to be Trump in the center, and then other smaller squares around him. It'll be, you know, Eric and Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka, Melania, Jared Kushner. It'll be like the Brady Bunch opening.
Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon. he'll be over the, you know, instead of Alice the Maid, it'll be Steve Bannon. Yeah, just like the Brady Bunch.
hopefully this is the last time that we will ever talk about, well, maybe the end of the show.
I don't remember talking about the Bush portrait at all. That was not news.
No, it wasn't news. No,
it's a portrait. We pretty much know what he looks like. 8 years, we know. We've seen it. This one, though, is kind of newsworthy only because, they chose Ivy for some reason.
Poison sumac.
whatever it is.
So there you go. On hers, I was like, oh, interesting portrait, but it doesn't look like her.
Right. Yeah.
Whatever. So, but like I said, his.
But it doesn't have to. Right, well, shouldn't it though? Why? What is? Here's my question. I'm waiting. Okay, let me get something started with the protesters. Hold on. Why do you have to change her? That's sexist.
Yeah.
If it doesn't look like her, what were you trying? What was being changed, and why? Okay, protesters, just run with that.
Go.
We need a hashtag within an hour. Come on.
Release the real portrait. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So, we just mentioned the portraits again because we were looking at CNN to see if there was anything on the Democrat memo. More things revealed yesterday. This from Chuck Ross at the Daily Caller. The Republican-led investigation into the anti-Trump dossier has recently revealed several intriguing links between Christopher Steele, lawyers, lobbyists, Democratic politicians, a former State Department official, and a Russian billionaire close to Vladimir Putin. Most of the revelations comes thanks to Chuck Grassley. The Iowa Republican released a letter in January that cited the names of several political operatives and lawyers who had not previously been linked to the dossier, Steele wrote, while on the payroll of the Clinton campaign and the DNC. And Thursday, a bunch of text messages leaked to Fox News revealed that Steele used a back channel to communicate with Democratic Virginia Senator Mark Warner, a top Democrat on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. The Russian aluminum billionaire who was allied with Trump is party to several of the connections. The billionaire also has also worked closely in the past with former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort. The Steele connections are being investigated by the Senate Judiciary Committee, which Grassley chairs, and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. The implications of the contacts remain to be seen, but they are worth watching as the investigation into the dossier goes on. The most important part, though, is when you see all of this, what you continually see, and this is what you and I brought up, because this is really the most important thing, that you know, we have always stated that since the very beginning, 13 months ago, when the narrative came out that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election, because that was the first accusation, not to change the outcome, but to hack the elections. That was the first allegations when we came back in January of 2017 from vacation. You and I remember that so well. And then, of course, it evolved. And as we've said today, there still isn't one specific allegation against Trump or anybody, you know, in his campaign colluding to change the outcome of the election or to actually hack the voting machines. Now, you know, that was a narrative because by the time we got to May of last year, the Pew Research poll showed that 56% of Democrats actually thought that voting machines were hacked. Mm-hmm. So they were successful in communicating that message. So the one thing that's interesting is every day that goes on, what you are looking at is, at the minimum, more examples of specific allegations of Democrats colluding with the Russians in order to do whatever they can to hopefully change the, at the minimum, hopefully change the outcome of the election or to delegitimize the newly elected president, Donald Trump. The point is, nobody is now debating that. No one.
Well, what's interesting is just as it's gone silent on the memo, at least over, you know, the last few days, they've gone silent on the collusion thing. You know, there's still, yes, a few articles that will hit every once in a while. And you can tell, I mean, you know, they're clearly on a mission. They're not going to change direction there. As long as Mueller is in place, they likely won't.
Right. All you hear now is obstruction of justice.
That's right. There's that. There's the, you know, just trying to tie him to the president, to Russia or business dealings or anything else. But it's moving away.
It's moving away from obstruction of justice.
Right,
it's moving away from that the last couple of weeks.
It basically is the same kind of, in the media, the same kind of fishing expedition that Mueller is on. And it's, well, we hear this may be. Well, remember when Sessions, you know, was talking to Mueller and, well, it could be obstruction. They want to talk to the president. It could be obstruction. It keeps changing. The narrative changes almost daily.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right, so you ready for this discrimination story? Are you ready?
All right.
This from Joseph Curl at DailyWire.com. A Texas man who was sentenced to 4 years in prison after his fourth driving while intoxicated conviction has come up with a novel appeal.
Okay.
Ralph Alfred Friesenhahn of San Antonio is trying to overturn his conviction by arguing that in the state of Texas, the 0.08 blood alcohol limit discriminates against alcoholics. Here is his case in a nutshell.
Okay.
The 0.08 limit does not factor in the higher tolerances that alcoholics have.
Okay. Dude, I can handle it. Dude, I can totally handle it.
No. I can read this next sentence and we can end the show. We don't have to go any further. Because even anything transracial doesn't compare to this. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Everybody stop what you're doing unless you're driving. Mm-hmm. He argues that the, quote, protected class of alcoholics, end of quote.
No. 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 No.
The protected class of alcoholics.
Still no.
That may be one of the most interesting legal lines I have ever read, because that's in the appeal. The protected class of alcoholics.
Medically, they have been able to identify alcoholism, a protected class in this way in terms of discrimination, no.
He argues that the, quote, protected class of alcoholics,
no.
Those with higher tolerances, can be prosecuted even without the state having to prove that they were impaired by alcohol to the point where they presented a danger to other drivers.
Yeah, I know.
Now, here's his story. He was jailed after his fourth DUI in 2016. He was arrested after his car rolled over on a rural road.
Wow.
A blood test showed that he had an alcohol concentration of 0.29.
Wow. 0.29.
More than 3.5 times the legal limit.
Wow.
His lawyer moved to throw out the indictment, arguing that the legal driving limit discriminated against alcoholics.
Yeah. Nope.
After he was convicted of felony DUI because of his prior alcohol-related convictions, Jones made the same argument on appeal, leading to Friday's Third Circuit Court of Appeals decision, upholding Robinson's ruling. Jones has not yet responded to an interview request. Sammy McCrary, the chief of the felony division for the County Criminal District Attorney's Office, said it is ridiculous and misleading to suggest that the law treats alcoholics differently. You're not being punished for being an alcoholic. It's the driving that's the problem.
Yep.
It's making the decision to get into a 3,000-pound vehicle after drinking.
Yep.
The Austin-based Third Court of Appeals didn't go for the novel appeal, saying in a ruling that the state law does not unfairly single out alcoholics because it applies equally to all drivers, including hardcore alcoholics, no exceptions. Friesenheim not only failed to present evidence that alcoholics are a protected class under the Americans with Disabilities Act or any other federal law, he also failed to prove that the law treats alcoholics differently than other DWI defendants, in the opinion of Justice Cindy Olson Borland. Instead, he argues that they should be treated differently and thus fails to establish equal protection violations. So there you go.
Yeah.
So he will he go any further with it? I don't know, but I can guarantee this. You may have. Does it go to federal court? Does it? This is a case that I see as if it ever got as high as the Supreme Court, saying, sorry, we're not even hearing it.
Yeah, that's not going to go anywhere. There is no such thing as a protected class, especially in terms of that kind of behavior. That protected class doesn't exist in terms of discrimination. Because this is not about...
Not yet.
Right.
Not yet.
It might.
Yet.
Well, here's the... Who are you colluding with? Speaking Russian. How
red,
dare you?
Red Eye Radio.
Yes. Aha. Oh, crap. I'm part of that.
That's true.
Anyway,
it's
it is. We're all involved, and everybody knows it. But people, the number one, he gets an F for effort. Not an A. He failed miserably. And B, on the bigger picture, you're right when you say not yet, but this is the kind of thing that it's coming down to is, okay, I'm a victim. Well, the thing is that here's the positive that I see out of that. He has recognized himself as an alcoholic. That's the first step to being sober. Pursue that.
Yes.
Put as much energy into that as you would this court case.
I'm sure his lawyer who filed this knew that it probably had no chance. I'm guessing he was able to pay the freight.
Lawyer.
Because of one reason. In his fourth DUI, he blew a 2.9 and flipped his vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Right there, you take away any argument mm-hmm. that he was not intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
He lost control of his vehicle.
Yep.
And registered a .29. So even if you did have a legal point, if there, and who knows, it is Austin. Even if you had in some state where they said, okay, we are going to have alcoholics as a protected class, and we must take medical considerations. We must look at medical considerations in every DUI to see if this person was impaired enough not to drive, not based on the number, but based on the situation. Mm. He would lose on the situation. The actual incident that happened.
Yeah. It's my advice would be to pursue sobriety with the same vigor and and energy. Put that energy to use.
Well, I'm amazed that because I think that the next places we go, because the judges said, look, it's not you're drinking. It's not that you're an alcoholic. It's that you made the decision to drive. And that's what the next thing will be. It is a disease. And once you catch the disease, that when the disease goes full bore is when you're drinking. And at that point, you have no control over it. So it's the disease. It's not me. So I'm not held responsible for it. Hey, I'm not even a lawyer. And I extended that argument out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy it, by the way. I don't buy the argument, by the way. I want to make this clear. I don't buy that argument. But somebody's going to know, are you buying that argument? You came up with it. No. I'm letting the mind expand as to where the legal profession will eventually go on this.
Well, because what we've seen is things like, employers firing someone for drinking on the job or something, and then the person would come back and say, well, I have this condition and I should be treated differently. I should get special consideration and a chance to address my condition, my disease, and then get sober. Now, some employers would do that voluntarily, maybe as a practice or policy. But, we've had this debate over the years. There have been a few cases, a handful of cases. In that regard, there, in terms of sharing the road with other people, and the point being made about a 3,000-pound vehicle trying to say, hey, and that's it. I mean, what the point he's trying to make is, hey, I can handle my booze. Hey, I can handle being, extremely drunk. And you're a .29, more than 3.5 times the legal limit. And we can have the debate of whether or not, .08 is that point for everyone. But .29, yeah, .29 most definitely. I mean, because they even measure it with your weight and how much food you've had and, that kind of thing. So they're
right.
But that
right.
goes back to, how fast your body basically is processing that drug, that alcohol. And so it all comes, essentially, that measurement is standard because of that. So for a female or a smaller person, it might not take them as much to get to a .08. Didn't we have this conversation
yesterday?
Just the other day. Yeah,
we had it yesterday.
With the,
on the
university thing, right?
On Tulane University, and 41% of their undergraduates, 41% of the undergraduate women saying that they've been sexually abused.
Right.
And part of the definition of sexual abuse was being intoxicated. That if you're intoxicated, you cannot give consent, and
right.
therefore it would be sexual, abuse. And then they started looking at the Tulane University, and I will say this, to get intellectual honesty in the poll, they did ask about drinking, and they found out that 74% of women who claim some form of sexual abuse and 87% of men who claim some form of sexual abuse were incapacitated, they claim, by alcohol.
Right.
Nobody defined what incapacitated meant, though.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what you and I said. I said, look, you cannot make, you need to ask a ton of questions in that particular case at Tulane University, because as we know, alcohol loosens up your inhibitions and things that you would not do, things that you would approve of, especially when it comes to intimacy, things that are okay when you're plastered, when you wake up the next morning, aren't okay.
Well,
those are the serious questions that you have to ask, because if you claim sexual abuse, but you were all for it the night before, under it, and regretted it tremendously the next morning, I would say that probably you will find a lot of legal experts that would say that does not fit the legal definition of sexual abuse.
Right. And then we got into talking about how much alcohol maybe a woman or a smaller person might ingest. And then
right.
for males, it was, I don't know, what they say? The females, or what they admitted to drinking,
right,
in essentially one scenario.
In one sit-down session, which was roughly three times a week for men and women, for these college-age students, the majority that legally can't drink, they're under the age of 21.
Right, they were drinking.
It was 3 to 6 for women and 7 to 11 drinks in one sitting for men. Or, for you know, men, boys, girls.
Right.
You know,
underage.
They're
men,
underage.
Males.
So, right.
Mm-hmm. Individuals, persons.
Right.
And going back to this legal argument here, you know, I think rolling your vehicle shows you can't handle it.
Exactly. You've lost that legal argument right there.
You've demonstrated that you're not capable. Ridiculous.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, there are lots of ELD solutions on the market. Magellan has a terrific solution. Mark Perini from Magellan tells us more.
At Magellan, we focus on making sure all drivers have an easy and low-cost way to be in compliance with the new ELD mandate, and including, and perhaps most importantly, owner-operators. We currently offer an ELD solution at its lowest price on the market at just $10 a month or $120 a year. And our solution plugs in with 5 minutes time, reducing the need for any IT support. We're excited to offer such a simple yet effective solution to owner-operators who want a robust and trouble-free solution to the ELD mandate. We created this ELD A2S solution as an affordable option for independent drivers and smaller owner-operators and fleets who needed to become compliant but did not need a lot of add-on features of other ELD solutions on the market. We've got the lowest priced ELD on the market right now, and an independent owner-operator will be able to access the ELD device through their own smartphone or a tablet. All they need to do is connect the Magellan ELD dongle into the JBus port in their vehicle under the dashboard, and download Magellan's ELD HOS app, pair the app's dongle, and set up their HOS account, and they're ready to go.
For more, you can log on to MagellanGPS.com/redeye. That's MagellanGPS.com/redeye. Meritor's Driver Report, brought to you by TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
You know, and we talk about that, you know, defense that the alcoholic tried to use to get out of a DUI. But as we know, in the states that are legalizing marijuana, this is a huge issue. And the issue is, look, I've got a medical problem, and therefore I should be able to smoke pot and do my job. And now you've got politicians trying to say, okay, there are some jobs you can't do, but there are some jobs you can do high.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you have companies pushing back and saying, no, excuse me. I mean, anything that our employees do, if it's known that they're under some type of substance, we can get sued in a variety of different ways. You know, it's not just the physical safety of someone. It's if somebody's involved in writing contracts and makes a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Can we at that point say, well, look, they were high because it was medical marijuana. Therefore, we shouldn't have to abide by this particular contract. It gets into all sorts of different legal nightmares.
And because anybody that would pay, you know, this much for that must be high.
Must be high. Anybody write that kind of contract, you have to be high. Well, it actually was. And so I mean, that's what they're dealing with right now, where companies are going to say, no, look, we don't want to take the chance of liability. And so all these things, you know, even the legalization of marijuana, all comes up to, okay, you may want to smoke pot. Your doctor may, you know, tell you you need to smoke pot 24/7. It doesn't mean you have a right to work at my job then.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That I've offered because I have my liability. I have to protect my assets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that what they're calling it now? you know, but it, and then it goes back to also other liabilities about, you know, well, they required the person to be there, and then which meant they had to drive. And then they, you know, because that's the question. Let's say you make that argument and your employer agrees. Oh, okay, you have this condition, and so this is going to be part of the treatment for the condition. But then the employer also, you know, calls you to be, you know, maybe to show up on a shift or just requires you to be there. Well, wait a minute. They required me to be there, but I was impaired. I had an accident. And so it's the requirement from my employer that's at fault here. I mean, this is how lawyers think. This is how they put these cases together. And inevitably, we're probably going to see a few that are similar to the scenario I just pointed out.
Age of Division is over. Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal team, Run Smart, a great website, a community, over 50,000 and growing. The number of members is just fantastic because it's people from all walks of the industry, all parts of the trucking industry, experts and drivers, a ton of drivers sharing great information, maybe some maintenance stuff, maybe some downtime stuff. And of course, the Team Run Smart pros, they're blogging all the time from the road. Go there, enjoy, get some feedback. It's really great. TeamRunSmart.com from Freightliner.
Pulled a nerve in my back in the last segment.
How'd you do that?
I don't know.
Laughing?
I think it was. I actually think it was from laughing. Yeah. It's like, all of a sudden I feel like, ow, I twinged a nerve from laughing so hard.
Yeah.
Can I get workman's compensation?
I think so.
No.
Wait.
Management.
He doesn't know.
You're claiming an injury? Drug test him.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're claiming you got injured laughing. Well, that's really what happened. I need workman's compensation now.
That's right.
All right. One of the reasons I'm laughing is normally any audio cut that we play in the show, we pre-listen to.
Right.
There are some that I just say, no, you know something? I want to share this. I want to hear it the first time as you do.
Right. Right.
And as everybody out there, and this is one of them, because you know this is going to just go right off the rails.
Sure.
And this is Tucker Carlson last night with the woman by the name of Deidre Griswold,
okay,
who is with the Communist Workers Party. There to defend North Korea.
Okay.
So we want to make this clear. This is not a segment of any type of substance whatsoever. This segment of Red Eye Radio is only for entertainment purposes only right now.
That's right.
So now the only thing I did pre-listen to was the beginning of it where he... So you're a communist, or... So you work for the Communist
Party. So you're an
old
school communist, are you?
All right. So are you ready? Here we go.
So you're a longtime communist. You're a longtime supporter of the DPRK. You visited at the invitation of the government. You think its leaders are great. When you see CNN and Reuters agreeing with you that its leaders are great, that must validate you. I mean, you must cheer as you watch the Olympic coverage.
I've been to both North Korea and South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on this program because I want to talk to the people who watch your show and make a serious point.
Yes.
That we're in the process of moving towards a nuclear war. And
uh-huh.
they have never experienced that, but the Korean people know very much what war is like, and they're not for it. And the people of South Korea don't want war any more than the people of North Korea do, and they showed that. at the Olympics, when the in the opening ceremonies, when they cheered with great joy the fact that the North and the South were marching together.
So since you've been to both countries, I'm just wondering. So one is obviously the world's last Stalinist regime. It's pretty rigidly Marxist. That's North Korea. South Korea is floridly capitalist. It's a market-based economy, which, of course, you reject. Which country would you rather live in personally?
I won't try to answer and debate you on everything you've said.
This is your show. I'm not debating you. No, that's a sincere question.
I only have a couple of minutes, but... But what I want to talk about...
You're not going to answer the question?
What I want to talk about is what I think is really of importance to the people of this country. That is that there's a group in Washington that really wants to push for a war. The Korean people don't want it. People here don't want a war, but they don't know what a war is like. They think you just push a button somewhere.
Well, but
that's
Let me just say that I've never said this to a communist before, but I actually agree with you. I don't want a war in Korea.
Good.
And I think there are people in Washington who are pushing for it. I think you're absolutely right there. Mm-hmm. I guess where I disagree with you is we don't know what the people of North Korea want because they're not allowed to say what they want.
I'm
a little... Well, if, really?
Yes,
so
that's
do they have internet access there? Oh, they don't.
They know what's going on in the world. They know perfectly well what's going on in the world.
How would they know? Because it's illegal to watch a foreign movie there.
No,
so how would they know?
You're making up a lot of stuff.
Is that not true?
People in North Korea are very aware of what's going on in the world. North Korea has a 100% literacy rate. Did you know that?
I did.
Figure. I got that figure from the CIA fact book.
I've seen it as well. But if you can't read anything but the propaganda,
they are not in some kind of a, jail. They're not. They are.
Really?
They are people who want to get out from underneath the threat of war that the U.S. has posed ever since it invaded their country in 1953.
Okay. I know you don't want to debate, by which you mean you don't want to answer real questions, but let's just try a couple of them. If they're free, why can't they leave?
Look,
that's a fair question.
Back and forth. People go back and forth. You're taking this whole in a whole other direction that shouldn't be of any significance to people here.
Why do you think
Hold on. There are people in Washington who are for a war? Why do you think they're for a war?
That's one of the questions I've never been able to answer in 35 years here. But I've been able to answer pretty simply is North Korea a free place, a place you'd want to live, or is it a prison? Do you know what the imprisonment rate in North Korea is? It's 800 per 100,000.
You know
what it is in South Korea? 100.
You know what the imprisonment rate is in the United States, Tucker?
I'm sorry?
The imprisonment rate?
It's very high.
That the U.S. has
it's nowhere
more
near
prisoners
800,
than any other country in the world?
That's not true, actually.
Korea
has... No, that's not true. North Korea is the highest. But let me just ask you a question.
No. I'm talking about the number of prisoners. That's the highest in the world in the United States. That's true.
Right, okay.
And the majority
So would you
of them
say the United States... Hold on.
The majority of them are poor people, and they wouldn't be in jail if they had a lawyer to keep them out of jail.
Right.
Like
actually,
so many people in Washington and Wall Street have lawyers that keep them out of jail.
So I guess this is kind of the point I was making, is that no regime, no matter how repressive, no matter how many of its own people it has killed, is ever undefended by the left if it hates America. If North Korea suddenly became pro-American, you wouldn't support it, would you? You know that you wouldn't.
You say that this is a country that hates America.
No, I would say that of North Korea. I think that's fair to say, having...
Did North Korea ever come over to this country and bomb us?
And as you see, it gets off the rails because they never stick to one topic. And that's where, and you and I have talked about this before. This is where Tucker Carlson's show becomes just pure entertainment. There is no substance to it whatsoever. It's simply, let's bring on some nutcase and we won't even ever settle on one specific question to force them to answer. And, that's where it does go off the rails for Tucker Carlson, because clearly there was no chance of having any type of debate with this woman.
Yeah. The part that really caught my ears where she tried to make the point that people in North Korea go back and forth.
Yeah.
Are you saying they cross the border into South Korea openly and freely, right? That's absurd, and you're a moron if you think that.
Right, and that's where he should have stopped her on some of those points, but he seemed to be lost on the interview a little bit as to where, because that would be the question I asked. So you tell me people from North Korea can, with a passport, freely cross, whoever wants to, freely cross into South Korea.
They travel the world.
Yeah. And everybody knows it's not true. But again, he could have pinned her down and didn't do it. Especially, look, I'd stop the interview when you say, no, you're on the show to answer the questions. You don't get to dictate the direction of where it goes. I'll let you have a statement at the end for a minute, but no, you have to answer my questions. And that's where at times his show just goes completely off the rails as it did there. But it gets to be, it is a little bit entertaining, but there is no substance to an interview like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just none. And I like Tucker Carlson, but as you and I have talked about, he is known for bringing on complete and total whack jobs that you know from the very beginning there will be no substance except to show that the person who he's talking to is completely and totally delusional.
Right. And you know, that really doesn't have, beyond entertainment, much of a point.
No. But this was the entertainment portion
yep.
of our show. So mm-hmm. we made it clear that this was...
Well, it's interesting to see how they think, because it makes you want to let them keep talking and just take notes along the way. Because it is just, it's a bizarre thought. But this is somebody who believes that the people of North Korea, the citizens of North Korea, they're just fine. They're just fine. They have a 100% literacy rate. Ask them if they have enough to eat.
Do they have a 100% food rate?
Yeah. Let's talk about the real injustices, because what has the left been about? You know, this is the whole thing that really gets me about Kim Jong-un's sister, the propaganda minister for a murderous dictator, getting deference and some kind of star treatment like she's a celebrity. It's bizarre.
It is bizarre, but I'm happy that it's happening, because the only thing that the benefit of a free society is when people feel emboldened to talk and say what they really feel and comment what they really feel. And you see this a lot. People talk about that social media, you know, does a great injustice. It actually doesn't. Anything that makes everybody feel like they can speak freely, and the radical things that they do are the things that, and radical things that they say are the things that are the story of that particular day.
Mm-hmm.
It means that a significant portion of the population knows how our nation's leaders think, how the entertainment people think, how the news people think. Look, we brought up, you know, what the New York Times wrote, what the CNN, you know, what they said about Kim Jong-un's sister. It's important that you know that. It's important that you know how people actually think inside of these news organizations.
Well, and what they talk about, you know, often is the horrible injustices here at home. And then they prop up like some kind of celebrity, the sister, the
right.
one that's in charge of the propaganda for a murderous dictator, and ignore the injustices, the real and harsh injustices of living under a dictator. That is ignored completely.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Hurley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
The story that was breaking news yesterday, that an envelope containing a non-harmful white powder addressed to Donald Trump Jr. was sent to a Manhattan apartment building unit that belongs to Trump's wife, Vanessa, the president's daughter-in-law, on Monday, authorities said. Powder, which appears to be cornstarch, was mailed to the apartment and was being taken to a lab in the city for further analysis. According to law enforcement officials, it's not clear who sent the envelope, but it was postmarked from Boston, according to a senior law enforcement official. Vanessa Trump opened the letter Monday morning and was decontaminated at the scene as a precaution. And then she called 911 to report coughing and nausea. She was taken to the hospital for observation strictly as a precaution. Now, people remember that, and I never saw the follow-up, but I saw it when Donald Trump Jr. said, you know, her husband, when he said, we're not going to have Secret Service protection anymore. I remember then when that became an issue a few months back. And I just read yesterday that that only lasted a week. So they went without Secret Service protection. And then I don't know why, but a week later they had it back, which I guess I would advise for anybody who is president of the United States that everybody in your immediate family have Secret Service protection.
Well, and especially right now, we're in this heightened state, and you don't know who's going to make a credible threat, or who might be a credible threat, or who might be, you know, just somebody mouthing off and is only issuing a threat, and it doesn't go beyond there. It's not any danger to the first family, but I'm guessing that the Secret Service analyzed that and said there's no way you can go without this protection. And it's likely the president himself said there's no way you can go without this protection. I mean, I think this for this particular president, we've seen, I mean, and it is really all-out hatred for the person. So if Trump is your last name, that's gonna be the case for a while, for a long time. I'm guessing the Trump family has their own security detail. I don't know to what extent, but it's certainly not the Secret Service. And wow, let's hope everything turns out to be okay in this case.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Okay, I got to be careful here because I pulled a nerve in my shoulder, actually, laughing earlier.
Yeah.
I'm
you
still,
need to lay down?
I'm still looking to see whether I should get workman's compensation for it, but the laughing just may continue. I may have to, all these. I really shouldn't do what I'm going to do here now because I don't want to laugh.
Yeah, just be careful.
I need to be. I can't strain myself, but this is just too good, and I did not get to see the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. In fact, as I've told you, I've only turned on the Olympics twice, once for curling, once for cross country skiing, and both times I went back to golf at Pebble Beach. But so I miss, and apparently this built up over the weekend and really became huge news yesterday. And it was Katie Couric at the opening ceremonies, and what she said when the Netherlands was introduced. And the response on social media from the people of the Netherlands. Now, this is just too good. Here we go. This was actually the audio cut from that moment from Katie Couric.
All right. Netherlands. Next is the Netherlands. It's probably not a newsflash to tell you the Dutch are really, really good at speed skating. All but five of the 110 medals they've won have been on the speed skating oval. Now, why are they so good, you may be asking yourselves? Because skating is an important mode of transportation in a city like Amsterdam, which sits at sea level. As you all know, it has lots of canals that can freeze in the winter. So for as long as those canals have existed, the Dutch have skated on them to get from place to place, to race each other, and also to have fun.
Well, social media in the Netherlands just exploded.
What, Katie? I'm sorry, we do what?
And this is just a sample from social media. All people from the Netherlands. You just can't make this up. NBC opening ceremony coverage. Katie Couric talks about why the Netherlands is so good at speed skating as the Netherlands enters the stadium. And this, folks, is why Americans are less bright about the rest of the world as they spread fake news.
There's only two kinds of people I can't stand. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch. Thank you, Michael Caine. But
CNN deputy media editor in the Netherlands, Anne Fung, wrote, "Everyone on Twitter wants Katie Couric to shut up. We haven't had frozen canals in decades." Here's my favorite. Rush hour in the Netherlands. Look at the picture here. The windmill in the background and all these speed skaters like on a canal.
Yeah, I was looking at that right when you showed it to me.
The Dutch do not, said a different viewer, the Dutch do not skate to work. Skating on clogs is too hard, even for us.
We can't get our wooden shoes inside the skates.
Oh, that's funny. One viewer wrote that a few of us skate to work the 5 days we have ice on average.
Right.
But the other 360 days per year, they stay home or sometimes use bikes or cars or trains to get to work.
What? They have cars and trains? When did that happen? Indoor plumbing, too?
More on social media. Oh, my God, crying laughing. You have to watch this explanation from Katie Couric as to why the Dutch are great at speed skating.
Oh, okay. Here's the thing. There's a research team. Somebody got that little less than factual factoid and put that in. Did somebody punk Katie?
Wow. Because when, they have what we call cheat sheets.
Mm-hmm. Just little factoids they can throw in.
That when everybody comes through, right. And that's a great point. Did somebody at NBC punk Katie Couric?
They skate to work. It's a mode of transportation.
I just love just some of the social media response. Actually, Katie Couric, the canals in Amsterdam rarely freeze. Besides, I'm sure Dutch skaters have practice rinks. Don't you think? Take some time away from North Korean propaganda and fake news and report a few facts. Why don't you?
That's funny. Wow.
I mean, just, and I'm trying not to laugh here. So I would normally be dying laughing, but I pinched a nerve in my shoulder from laughing last hour. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just wondering
Think I could get compensation. I mean, seriously, I mean, could I go to a doctor? And how'd you do it? I was laughing at, oh, it's the chairs.
Yeah, it's the chairs. Right.
It's the chairs. Yeah.
Yeah. You can say that on the air because our management doesn't listen. go with that. The chairs.
Hey, did you know that the guys over at Red Eye are talking about how they can sue you for how they can get compensation for Gary because he hurt a nerve laughing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Odds are I'm going to make this clear. Odds are I'm probably not going to sue.
I'm guessing you're not either.
And if they drug test me, I'm simply going to say I have an addiction problem and claim American with Disabilities Act. Discrimination.
Uh-huh. Right. Keep talking.
Well, the only thing they're going to find is what? I'm actually having a cup of coffee, which is strange. It's very rare for me, so I got some caffeine in my system. That's really about it.
All right. Go with that.
So there.
Caffeine only.
So okay. There you go. I mean, it could be when I skate home. They might claim it was skating here and skating home.
Nope, you're in Texas. We all ride horses as a mode of transportation.
That's true. It's...
And we have to go home and feed our cattle.
Or we take our pickup trucks.
Now, that is true.
With all the empty beer cans in the back.
No, I recycle.
And with the rifle there in the window, the back window. It's...
No, I brought it inside.
So, and has NBC responded to it?
I haven't seen a response, but frankly, I don't care enough to type it into Google. Here's the other thing too. You know, outside of the Netherlands, there had to have been a ton of people that Googled that as soon as she said it. Because somebody would say, wait a minute, I don't know anybody from the Netherlands. I've never been there. I've never heard that before. Is that true? Google.
Right.
And you know, a million people Googled that right after she said it. Wow.
Let me see here. They have NBC. This is the Fox News story. And this NBC reportedly fired one of its Olympic analysts who praised Japan's role in South Korea's economic development, disregarding Tokyo's rule with an iron fist from 1940 to 1945, which is still a sensitive subject to many in Seoul. That was a headline that said NBC totally insults South Korea.
Right.
That one. But the NBC did not immediately respond to a request for comment on this one, though.
Mm.
So there you go on Katie Couric's comment. So don't insult South Korea, but if you laud and compliment the propaganda minister for North Korea.
Yeah.
You are cheered.
Right.
Insult America.
Mm-hmm.
While complimenting North Korea.
Sure.
You're cheered.
Yes.
Insult South Korea. You're fired.
And the Dutch still don't like you. But let's be frank. They don't like anyone. You know why? Because they have to skate everywhere they go. Just makes them tired and cranky.
I don't know about you, but I'd quit if I made a serious statement like that. I'd say, you know, I have enough money. I'm going to hang it up right now.
Right.
The fact that I actually read something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's time to go. Time to go. That'd be funny. You hear the microphone being, you know, taken off and, you know, she's walking off the set. I gotta go. Gotta go. Sorry.
I'm done.
Yeah.
There's too much shame.
Well, what's funny is because, you know, in the opening ceremony, it's a lot like hosting a parade, you know, because it's kind of a parade of people and nations. And you're going through that. So you throw in these little factoids. My question is, do they get to proofread them? Because there's probably 1,000 of them. Because if the point being is, if I saw that, if I'm proofreading, right? Because you would think, let's do some kind of table read, dry rehearsal thing on some things. Here are some factoids we're going to provide you, okay? You would look at that and go, really? Do they really do that? Now, again, your research team gave that to you.
Right.
So I just have to wonder, how that gets through. Seriously.
I'm looking. I put Katie Couric get punked on the Netherlands.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you see also the newscast where the graphics, instead of Pyeongchang, it said P.F. Chang?
Yes!
Again, you're building graphics, right? Now, probably some 22-year-old punk kid is looking at that and going, hey, look, I'm going to put up P.F. Chang. Look, look, look what I did. I did, instead of Pyeongchang, I did P.F. Chang. See, like the restaurant. Watch this, dude. But there has to be somebody else, right? Back there doing the graphics. Somebody.
Yes. That's not the, that is
somebody
not,
else that's going, right. Okay, that's funny, but destroy that now and put up the Pyeongchang graphics.
Yes, that isn't, please. That is not, that would not be the anchor unless it was a very, very small market.
Right. P.F. Chang. Seriously. Just shut up. Just shut up.
Okay, that was in Chicago.
Wow. I was thinking a suburb, but.
Channel 7.
Okay.
Blames graphics mix-up.
Well, that's not a mix-up, though. Someone deliberately made the P.F. Chang. Unless they, did they do, okay, let me give them the benefit of the doubt. Did they do a recent story on P.F. Chang?
Look, no, it's, look, it, look at it. It's,
oh, no, I've seen it. Yeah, there, I've seen right it. There. But was there a story on P.F. Chang where, I don't know, someone kind of merged the graphics? Because it says P.F. Chang 2018, and then the Olympic rings underneath that.
Okay, the station quickly owned up to the mistake, apologized, saying the error was due to a mix-up with the graphic created for a separate satirical piece.
Okay. All right, there you go.
That would make sense.
No, that makes sense.
That actually does make sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Now I want to know what the satirical piece is, because if we're doing something at P.F. Chang, I'd like to be there.
Yeah. So would I.
Yeah. I'm on board. Let's do that.
And it's P.F. Chang 2018, and right beneath it, Show of Unity.
I love it. That's great. Show of unity. But you know what? If you've had the food, there probably is unification there.
Exactly.
I'm guessing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Wait.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get aboard, well, the infrastructure plan came out yesterday, and I think that you look at it and you say, okay, yeah, you know, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, that the permitting, making it easier to get permits and get projects going, will be a good thing. They look at the money sort of like we did, and we said, you know, look. Number one, there's $20 billion in the current budget that they've already approved for the next couple of years.
Right.
Congress is not going to approve $200 billion over the next 10 years. They're not going to
doubling that, you know, for the next 10 years.
Right. They're not going to add it. Well, it's just for 2 years, what they agreed to for $20 billion for the next
Right, but
years.
You would be adding to that.
Right.
You would be doubling it.
Yeah, they said that's not, especially now, the criticism's coming in big time from conservatives to this particular budget. So the infrastructure, they said, the permitting and things like that are enough. There's also the question that we asked, that is $20 billion going to leverage $1.3 trillion in state and private financing? No.
Well, because it gets into this convoluted government math thing, And they start putting things into the column that could have already been in place or planned by states, municipalities, or even the private-public partnerships in any given area, I guess. The thing that concerns me is allowing the states greater, as they use the word, flexibility in tolling interstates. It's limited right now. And it's been, I think, a huge concern, Now they're going to open it up and allow states even more room to toll those interstates.
Mm-hmm.
We've paid for those roads, and we'll be paying for them because, you know, they're not going to take those tolls down anytime soon. They start tolling parts of the interstate. And there's now, Oregon and other states have now chimed in, along with states that have been on the bandwagon like Pennsylvania. And it becomes very, very expensive. And so for the travelers, so or the trucking industry or in any commercial venture. So, you know, that's where I have a great concern. Allowing those states to do that. Opening up like that is going to be very dangerous because you give the states the ability to do that, and there's plenty of states that will take advantage of that.
Yeah, interesting thing.
Just a moment. Here's your forecast.
We're not done with rain in the south. The lower Tennessee Valley will see more light rain today and through the week. Flood warnings and advisories have been issued for numerous states, including western North and South Carolina and the western half of Georgia. The rain chances will extend from eastern Texas over to the coastal Carolinas and southward throughout the day and, as I mentioned, throughout the week. Buffalo, as we head to the northeast, should be partly sunny today, high 30. Boston, sunny, 33. Now, icing will be possible overnight in those areas where the rain ends, but the cold temperatures meet up, say, around the West Virginia, Maryland, VA line. In some of the areas of usual suspect, Cumberland area and Maryland, mainly due to the wet roads from rain and a big drop in overnight temperatures. Heavy snow and hazardous travel conditions are expected over portions of the central and southern Rockies. Your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Sophisticated, secure communications channels. Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Just one more note that I want to make on, the president and the infrastructure plan. Probably the biggest impact will be making, you know, permitting easier. When you actually look at the fact of $20 billion over the next 10 years, which right now, they don't believe it's going to pass through with Republicans, especially since $20 billion is on the books for the next 2 years anyway. So it isn't going to pass. They realize now, especially with the blowback over the weekend, because now it seems everybody's piling on. All the conservatives and publications, talk show hosts, you name it, saying, you know, what's going on here with this incredible spending? What happened to the Republicans? And they're feeling it. And I think it might be a little bit unexpected. It might die in a month because I don't know if they're feeling it from their constituents. That might be interesting and very positive if they are. It might be more of the media that they're feeling it from, conservative media right now. So the permitting process, things like that. We're trying to save this snail. You know, sorry, build the thing. But when you consider, and this was in the Wall Street Journal, less than 10% of all the money spent in the stimulus in 2009, less than 10% went for public works. The rest went for safety net programs, went to the general budget, nothing to do with rebuilding the infrastructure, nothing. Not that the final report is in. More Hurricane Sandy money went to community development and not repairing things. The majority of it. And, you know, it's interesting to see when you talk about this, it's like, okay, but where's some money going to go? And they also mention here that many projects that do receive federal funding are not national priorities, such as the California bullet train.
Right. Sure.
They said that's because the government typically awards competitive grants to politically favored projects rather than those that would produce the biggest economic benefits. The Obama administration rigged cost-benefit analysis to reward projects that would promote public housing and reduce carbon emissions.
Well, and something that you and I have talked about, doing the real work on the infrastructure. Infrastructure became a negative term because of the whole shovel-ready jobs thing. And that approach to it, you know, when you're talking about let's create jobs, goes back to the Milton Friedman argument, and that is, okay, great, then don't use shovels, use spoons. And then I would argue, don't use spoons, use forks.
Right.
and so the idea is that if you're going to, first of all, repair is a given, right? You and I have always said, okay, that category of repairing roads and maintaining roads needs to be pretty much off the table. That's a given. I don't know anybody that's arguing against repairing the roads. But beyond that, talking about expanding certain things, in fact, just a few blocks from here, our studios, they expanded a part of an interstate, and it was because of so much population growth, 15 to 20 minutes north of here, and all along the way, because this area, this part of our state especially, is booming. There's a ton of corporations that come here that have moved here over the years, and the population is booming. The state overall is booming, but it required that we had more lanes. We expanded the roads. And what you're doing there, the idea, is to get people to work faster so they can be more productive. Because if you're sitting in traffic, you're not productive. And that's what it comes down to. If it's going to be something that gets a return where it helps to maintain or improve productivity in any given market, in any given town, any given area, then that's one thing. But the shovel-ready jobs thing is something very different. The political moves, as you just mentioned from the Wall Street Journal here, are very different because it's not about productivity. It's about agenda. And that's where we have to, you know, stray from that and go back to focusing on productivity.
And the agenda of the federal government may be right, but then they give the money to state projects where the state wants it, and the political motivation of the states is not where it should be.
Under the Obama infrastructure plan, for example, there was money that was going towards purchasing areas where there was going to be new development. In other words, expand the roads or put in new roads to create, you know, shortcuts or new routes to and from A to B. And what they did is they essentially purchased the land, and then they didn't start. Some, not all, they didn't start those roads. They basically went in and made the purchase, but they didn't actually create the new infrastructure. And so there has to be follow through, and you're right, there's the flaw. You give it to a state, well, a state gets it, and they have a totally separate agenda.
And the other thing they point out is if he could get it all, let's say he could get the $200 billion and it's solidly in there, and then he could raise that actually all the states and the private sector came through with $1.3 trillion to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you got to bring in foreign workers. There isn't enough. And they noted that 78% of contractors, of the general contractors, the Associated General Contractors of America, reported last month 78%. They can't find enough workers. Mm. So if you were going to have a massive infrastructure project in America, there aren't enough workers. And in order to avoid delays, because that's what you want, you want to put people to work because you want the economy to do better. Remember, the infrastructure program was not sold that just on the fact that all the roads and bridges are falling apart, which they are not, by the way. But it wasn't sold just on that as it was during the Obama administration. It was basically also sold as we need to put people back to work.
Right, a jobs.
Well,
right.
The fact is when it comes to construction contractors right now, the big problem is not enough workers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is right now. In fact, a huge shortage. So if you're going to do this, they said in order to avoid delays or exorbitant project costs, and you want to avoid delays because you want to get it moving. You want to get this done. you're going to have to increase the H-2B visas mm-hmm. in order to get workers in, is their claim. So all interesting challenges. But the fact is, I don't believe the money is going to come through. And even if it does come through, $20 billion a year, in my humble opinion, you may still get that kind of private state partnership development, but the $20 billion a year isn't going to get you. That's not going to be the incentive to get you the 1.3.
Well, because you divide, if you were to divide it equally among the states, then you're looking at, again, just a small amount, relatively speaking, for each state. How much of an incentive is that for the states to, again, because how many of the states are going to go in and kick in money? And that would be money that they weren't going to kick in if not for this plan, right?
Right.
So we have to assume, because in fact it's true, that all the states have their own money for infrastructure. But how many would be, I guess, incentivized by this infrastructure plan from the federal government to expand that? Even if they are incentivized, it doesn't mean they can necessarily get there. It's, you know, because again, they're going to have to kick in more of their money. The private sector is then going to have to get on board. How does the private sector get paid in something like this? You know, so there's a lot of moving parts to something like this, and it's a grand plan. But the fact of the matter is that what is the likelihood of this plan even getting off the ground? Starting with, again, going back to your concern, or, you know, your point on whether they can even get it approved to add another $20 billion, you know, per year for this particular infrastructure plan beyond what they're already budgeted for the next 2 years, at least.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And also on the debt and everything from the budget from late last week. Quite a bit. I mean, you see that the mainstream media has taken the opportunity as conservative Republicans and conservative media come out against it, so showing that there's infighting. Inside the Republican Party, and there is, I would say that as we have told you for the longest time, where our mindset is and how it differs from the Republican Party, we weren't surprised or angry by what happened last week because we've been expecting it for years from the Republican Party, and we've been saying it for years. If you've been listening to the show, we used to get Republicans angry at us when we would bring it up. No longer, because they understand that the Republican Party, when it comes to spending, have moved farther left. And I think last week was just that final stamp as to how far left they have gone when it comes to spending and the debt and deficit. And then following the signing of it, you get the White House with, you know, comes out with the budget with a lot of cuts. But the budget's already set for the next 2 years. So it's really meaningless. It's a moot point to begin with. It's like, let's spend all the money. Oh, OK, but we're going to cut. Well, you can't. You've already spent the money, and you've got Congress saying that, okay, but we're going to look at it in the future, and you have to understand that this was all about national defense. Well, then fine. What will it be about next time? National defense. And what will the Democrats do? Fine. And so it's not going to change. There is no change. There is no conservative wave that is coming. Republicans may hold on to the House, may hold on to the Senate, come November of this year, but it is not the same Republican Party fiscally that it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago.
Well, and there's the question, if just assume that they do hold on to the slim margin in the Senate and they hold on to a fairly decent margin in the House. Well, why? To do what? Now, the tax cuts are a positive. But is all of that a wash if we go in and we have these tax cuts, and it brings on an economy, and as has happened with former presidents, you start spending more. You have a greater revenue from tax cuts, but it's a wash because you're spending even more. And there's the idea is that, okay, why do you want the tax cuts? It's beneficial to the people, but ultimately it's beneficial in that it is, in some ways, you get revenue to the federal government. You might have a growing economy, which is beneficial to the people in society, more freedom for the people because they have more stable jobs or better paying jobs. All of that is a positive. But in terms of the fiscal side of things, then it becomes a wash or even detrimental because then Washington decides that they're going to spend more. That's happened before.
Right. And what people don't understand is on the defense side, even with the increase in defense, I think still it's only 15% of the budget, while the entitlement programs, and I'll say entitlement and other non-entitlement programs, is up to almost 70% of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've seen over the last 50 years in this country, you've seen the massive, massive difference in how the pie is being shaped. And it's eventually going to come to the point of you're going to have to cut back on entitlement and non-entitlement spending that has nothing to do with, defense whatsoever. If you ever want to get it under control, and the people of the country are not in the mood to see that happening. So you are in this time right now where I don't know how it ends, because when you have the Republicans saying, look, we're willing to spend because it's going to make us look better right now, and it's going to make us look better in November, and we have to deal with the right now, that the people of this country don't care what happens 20 years from now, so we can't, in order to survive. If we're worried about having sane fiscal policy, and how it will affect the country 10, 15, 20 years from now, we have no chance of being elected into office right now, because that's not what the people of the United States wants. Right. We're not talking about people listening to this show and conservatives out there. We saw the 67 still in the House vote against this budget, and, a few in the Senate. But for the most part, as we see, the majority of the Republican Party have moved very, very far left. If you look at what the far left was 20 years ago, they've moved very, very far left when it comes to spending. They just don't care. Why? They realize what it takes to win in politics right now and what the American public wants right now. And right now, the American public wants what it wants right now. And next year they will. 10 years from now they will. It'll only matter when they say, okay, it's gotten to the point, interest rates are so high, interest on the debt is taking a huge portion of the budget, we have to start cutting back.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.